Very glad to be talking with Kenny Florian. The last time UFC fans saw Florian in the octagon was this past September in a very nice win over Dean Thomas at Ultimate Fight Night 11. And Kenny, after that victory, you had mentioned that you wanted to kind of pack it in for 2008, take some time off, let your body heal and rest. Why did you feel that it was so necessary to do that then?
Yeah, it was kind of a decision more my coaches coming in and putting a halt to things. I had kind of a busy end of the year. I had three fights in about 5.5 months. So kind of the deal, kind of part of that deal, because I took that fight on short notice. Part of the deal with my coaches was if I took that fight, that I had to kind of take a long while before I came back. So kind of let the body heal up, let the body kind of rest, and just kind of reset my training for a while. And that was pretty much the decision on that.
Now, if Spencer Fisher wouldn't have gotten injured and would have fought on that card, were you planned to fight in, you know, maybe UFC 77, 78, 79, or any of the other ones that would round out the year?
My plan was 78, to fight in the 78 show in Newark, New Jersey.
Was there a proposed opponent for that fight or not yet?
There wasn't. Nope, no opponent at the time.
Was it possible that if all the, you know, the stuff with Sean Sherk hadn't been resolved at the time when you were thinking about this, that you would have been the guy fighting BJ Penn for the interim title at UFC 78?
Who knows? That it could have been a possibility, but I think the UFC, had their decision made on Joe Stevenson already. He's been doing great, and definitely deserves a shot as much as any of the top guys right now.
Now, you were the individual who Sean Sherk beat to regain sort of that lightweight title, and now obviously the whole belt and division is sort of in limbo at the top. Deep down inside, were you a little disappointed that you didn't get the first crack at the title since, he was the one that beat you and now it's kind of left in the open?
No, not at all. I don't feel upset about it at all. I feel that, things happen for a reason, and I'm confident that, if I continue to do what I'm doing, to keep on training hard and keep fighting, tough guys and winning, that the shot will come my way eventually anyway. I feel that my original title shot was definitely rushed in many ways. I think there wasn't many guys in the lightweight division at the time who were doing that great, and I had a shot at the title with only about a year and a half of fighting in MMA. So it came very quickly, and now is my kind of chance to just keep improving, keep getting better, get more experience with every fight, learn from every fight, and I know that when my time comes again, I'm not going to let it pass me by. I'm going to do the most with that opportunity.
Do you regret then taking that fight with Sherk for the title last year?
No. Again, I try not to look back in the past and have any regrets. Just try to look towards the future, and obviously, I would have loved to then. Had a lot more fights under my belt. I would have loved to have been injury-free. But, again, you can't look back in the past. You can't look at any excuses. You just have to look at that thing as a positive. It taught me a lot about what I needed to do to get better and what I needed to do to improve. And it's about looking forward to the future and hopefully another title shot.
All right, so interim titles are clearly the flavor of the day in the UFC. Definitely not something that Dana White planned for with all these with injuries and the suspension to Sherk and the Randy Couture situation. As one of the top 2 to 3 contenders in the lightweight division, I'm curious as to what your thoughts, because there's certainly a lightning rod for discussion. Some people love him, some people hate him, some people feel that they're completely unnecessary. What's your take on the interim title, and more specifically the fight between Penn and Stevenson to be for that interim title?
Yeah, I'm not crazy about interim, belts and all that stuff. I think it's kind of, unnecessary. Obviously, injuries going to happen, and you can't really prepare for things like positive drug tests and all that stuff, or injuries, but. At the same time, I think, there's nothing wrong with kind of just going out and fighting and determining a number one contender instead of going out and just having it be for a belt. I think, promotion wise, it gets people more excited if it is for a belt. But in many ways, it also adds to the confusion. So myself, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the whole interim, championship belt thing. But I think there are a lot of people out there who see it as a big deal. And obviously, every fight's a big deal. But once there's a belt on the line, I think it gets more and more interest from the fans. So, I have nothing to do with that decision. But UFC is going to do with what they're going to do.
Yeah, they seem to be treading towards a sort of a boxing situation where now you have too many belts and people get confused as to, who is in fact the actual real title holder. If you were the man sitting in the high chair in that big office, would you ever consider maybe a tournament? I mean, you have three divisions right now in limbo. People love tournaments. How would you feel? Maybe not a one-night tournament like Pride used to do and Strikeforce just did recently, but maybe some sort of tournament where you can actually crown a number one contender and then eventually a champion.
Tournaments definitely are pretty cool. They are exciting. I've always found them exciting when I would watch Pride. However, I think you just run into that same situation once again. Here you get a guy, let's say, guy's moving his way through the tournament, a possible favorite, and all of a sudden he gets injured, someone else steps in his place, we're just right back in the original situation. So, again, with tournaments, you can't, again, it almost makes things worse when you get other things, with, possible injuries and positive drug tests or conflict of schedules, whatever. So I think it's as of right now, I think it's just, it's good the way it is. And again, you can only expect so much when you have a scheduled title fight or scheduled fight. But with the tournament, I think you run into some more problems.
Now, that fight against Sean Sherk at UFC 64 last year in October, it was a tough loss for yourself. Now, with everything that's gone down with Sherk, I mean, it's the obvious question. Do you hold any ill will towards the guy? Anything in the back of your mind that now, after everything that's come out, kind of makes you question as to, who was out there and what if he was using anything? I mean, obviously there was testing and everything, but you never know nowadays. Does that ever creep into your mind once you heard of his suspension?
Yeah, sure. I mean, obviously that's something that will pop into my mind and a lot of people's mind. I think any time someone tests positive for drugs or, people will question a lot about what they've accomplished in their career. And I think we've seen it time and time again with other athletes. You got the Barry Bonds situation that's really hot right now, Marion Jones. And these are all people Marion Jones specifically, I mean, think about the rigorous testing that she went through. She was tested many times. She tested clean every single time. We know now that she was dirty all along, that she was, using drugs. And I say this to people all the time, and for some reason people don't get it, that because people test clean doesn't necessarily mean that they are clean. I think the only way to do it is to do random testing, really, to find out truly if someone's dirty or not. And, obviously you can't, babysit, all the fighters and find out what they're doing in the off season and follow them around, wherever they go. Athletes, they're just naturally very competitive people, and they're always going to be looking for some type of an edge. And, they're willing to take those risks. A lot of fighters are taking those risks. A lot of professional athletes are taking those risks. You got some money that's on the line now. And, people want to get right to the top and then want to get there and get whatever edge they can. Myself, I just think that it'd be tough to look in the mirror, the morning after and know that you got to the top or you're a champion. Because you were able to cheat better than someone else. I just don't see the merit in that. And unfortunately, I think it's going to create a sort of vicious cycle. You see, Joe Schmo next to you and the other guy next to you using, and you find, yourself, getting caught behind or whatever. You can't keep up the type of training schedule that others can who are using. and then that guy decides to use, and it just becomes a vicious cycle. So it's a dangerous thing that's happening in sports, and hopefully it just comes down to the athlete being responsible and saying they're going to just choose not to use it. That's the main thing. But I'd be foolish to think that Shirk was the only guy that is using out there, or that used out there, or that tested positive out there. I've fought a lot of guys, beaten guys that have used, and I've lost to guys that have used, and it's just part of the sport. I don't want to use that as an excuse. Ultimately, it comes down to me. I'm confident that if I keep working on skills, regardless of whether someone's using or not, I feel I have a chance against anyone.
So just for clarification, Kenny, when you say random testing, would you like to see guys being tested, 2 months, 3 months before their bout, during training?
Yeah, well, it what happens is, if I know that I'm going to fight on a certain date, then people can time their cycle accordingly, so they don't test positive on that date. I think everyone knows that you can cycle your drugs or your performance-enhancing drugs, so you don't test positive. But what happens if it's just some type of random testing throughout the season, throughout the year? At any point throughout that year, you can get called upon to be tested. I think that's a little bit different. I think you'll start catching even more people, and it will kind of create that doubt and the people that are using's mind of when they should be using and when they're cycling and all that stuff, and they go up through a wrench into their plans. And I think that's the only way where it's really going to cut down on usage. People will still use, but I think it will significantly cut down on usage.
All right, so it's no secret that you made your name for yourself on the national stage by entering the first season of The Ultimate Fighter. Only had two fights under your belt before that show. I'm curious, this is kind of a two-part question. I'm curious as to, how you got into all this. I mean, when you first started out, the UFC mixed martial arts clearly wasn't at the stage that it is now, and that was just, 3 short years ago. And then with the show itself, I mean, that show had a big question mark on it when it all started. It didn't have the same name attached to it now, or the same type of luster that is associated with it now. How did you get in contact with the guys over there, the producers, Dana White, whoever, for The Ultimate Fighter?
Yeah, let's see. I've told this story a lot. Myself, I was kind of involved in mixed martial arts, just kind of as a test to myself. I wanted to test my Brazilian jiu-jitsu more than anything else, more than me saying I want to be a mixed martial artist and learn the striking and learn the wrestling and all the other things. I kind of just wanted to test my Brazilian jiu-jitsu out there, so I'd kind of fight the toughest guy locally that I could find. And one of those matches that came up was against Drew Fickett. It was kind of on short notice. Drew Fickett was coming into town to fight for a title, and they offered me the shot about 9 days before the fight. It was up a weight class, and Drew Fickett came in with this amazing record. And at that fight, Dana White happened to be in town in Boston, and he was actually scouting Drew Fickett for the first season, The Ultimate Fighter. He saw this, skinny kid from Boston fighting, this monster Drew Fickett with this very impressive record. He thought I was going to get killed, and as did a lot of people. And we just had a war, and I thought I won. It ended up being a split decision loss. Two judges, one for Drew, one went for me. And Dana White was very impressed with the fight and came backstage and talked about this new Ultimate Fighter show. And he asked if I would send in a video interview to try for this new show. And I wasn't really that interested. I didn't really want to be a reality show guy or anything like that. Ultimately, my friends and family were like, you should just, try it. I ended up sending in like a seminar DVD where I, teach Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I sent that in to the producers, and they ended up flying me out to Vegas and I tried out for the show, and they accepted me for the show. And they said, once again, not only was it one weight class above my weight, it was going to be two weight class above my weight at 185. And me not being smart enough, I said yes, and then I would do it. And for me, it was a great opportunity. I got to train with amazing coaches, Chuck Liddell, Randy Couture, and train with some amazing fighters. That was, you know, the beginning, I think, of a new age mixed martial arts revolution in this country and in the world. And at the time, we had no idea. I mean, I didn't even know if the show really would go to could go to TV. I had no idea if it was a definite thing or if it would catch on, if it would be popular. And you know, obviously, it worked out well, I think, for all of us. So.
Yeah, the story of how that first season all came about with the UFC actually paying for the airtime on Spike has been talked about a lot. While the show was being shot, did you guys even know that this would air on Spike or some other network, or was it just this is some sort of pilot that we're doing and you know, who knows, or was there actually a deal in place?
I guess we heard about it. I remember them saying that it would be on this Spike channel that I never really heard about, and I thought it would be kind of like a small time TV channel, TV station, whatever, on cable. And I didn't really hear about Spike too much before I was on the show, and of course it ended up being on TV, and we learned it was, you know, going to be a 13 episode deal, and. And all this stuff. So we knew it certainly had the potential to be big, but you know, at the time we had no idea how it would be edited and what would be shown. And you know, we were training, you know, every single day. We were there, you know, as opposed to now on the season, they only have like they're there for 35 days. We were there for 2 months, or anyways, the people who made it all the way to the finals were there for 2 months, and it was 7 days a week. And we had to do all those stupid challenges, and we were training all the time and fighting all the time. And, it was a nutty, nutty schedule, and obviously, just all the problems inside the house where we didn't have enough food at one point the first week. So we were the kind of the guinea pigs. All the other seasons have it pretty easy compared to how we had it. But again, I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't change it for anything.
Yeah, I actually totally forgot about those crazy challenges that they make you guys do, and with Willa Ford hosting it and everything. I mean, you think about it now, it's a totally different show.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So you mentioned, you know, you had to go in at 185. Now, obviously, you fight at 155. I mean, how tough was that for you? Was that a big thing that, you know, maybe this is not something that you'd be willing to risk having to fight 30 pounds over the weight that you're normally used to?
Yeah, it was pretty brutal. I mean, even at 170, I was small. You know, you look at Matt Hughes walking around and George St. Pierre. I mean, you know, it was very difficult at the time. I think almost that lack of experience helped me. I had a confidence in me, a belief in myself that, you know, I could take on anything. I could do anything. And it was a positive experience, and it caused me to learn that much more. And I had, you know, at first I kind of wasn't sure if I deserved to be there. And once I started training with all these guys and had all this other experience, you know, I said, you know, not only did I feel that I deserved to be there, I felt that I could win the show. You know, I had a good shot at it just from training with the guys and get more and more confidence all the time. And, you know, I just learned a lot from just the whole experience. You know, there was a time where I was very bitter about a lot of it, just the way that I performed on the show. You know, I just felt it wasn't good at all. But at the same time, it's driven me so much. I look back on the experience in the finale where I just, you know, froze under pressure, and it just drives me. It's driven me so hard in my training to constantly improve and get better and learn from that experience, and the importance of being mentally prepared and being mentally strong out there, and getting used to the pressures of the camera and the big money fights and all that stuff.
The fact that you were on Spike TV and the first time fighting in front of a live audience, that had something to do with, you believe, mentally with your loss to Diego in the finals?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I know how I would do against everybody in training, and I always did extremely well in training with everybody. And I think a lot of the competitors on the show, gave me a good shot at being Diego and all that stuff, and that was very important to me. But you look at the finale and what happened. I mean, Diego just ran right through me, and it was just. I remember warming up before that fight and hitting pads, literally for no more than maybe 20 or 30 seconds, and my body just feeling like I just climbed Everest. I mean, my muscles got all tight. I couldn't breathe. I mean, it was all of a sudden, it just hit me. And I remember getting questions all the time. You know, this is the biggest fight of your life. Do you feel anything, any pressure at all? I was like, no, this is great. You know, I'm ready. And all of a sudden, just backstage, it was like this, you know, huge thing. Everything hit me. It hit me, you know, literally that this was for a big contract. This is the biggest fight of my life. I'm going to, you know, this is going to be seen by millions of people. There are, you know, a few thousand people out there in the auditorium. And it was huge. It was something I just wasn't prepared for, you know, and certainly that experience fighting for titles, fighting with a lot of pressure. I didn't have that. I never had that in MMA. And it was an experience that got me to realize how mentally tough you need to be going out there, and how that experience going into each fight needs to be there, you know, for you to perform at your best. And everyone talks about the UFC jitters. We've seen a lot of great fighters go in there and not perform up to their ability. And it's one of those things you can't prepare for. You know, you can't prepare for it. It's one of those things, unfortunately, that you have to taste that loss before you can learn from it, you know.
Yeah, and Diego Sanchez has, tasted two consecutive losses now, and a couple of rumors that he might actually join you in the 155 weight division. Any chance mm-hmm. that we'll possibly see a rematch there? And is that something that you'd be interested in?
Yeah, you know, of course, the competitor in me always wants to get back at every loss that I've had. And who knows, you know, that may happen. I think with Diego, if he goes down to 155, I think he'll have to, probably start with someone else. Obviously, you know, I've had three wins in a row. He's had two losses in a row. So I think although he's coming down from 170 and doing extremely well at that weight class, I think he'd probably have to work his way through the 155 division before I faced him. I think he's still an unbelievable fighter. Certainly those losses against two tough fighters don't mean anything. Diego's still a phenomenal fighter. And who knows, if he goes down to 155, I'm sure he'll do very well. And hopefully, you know, God willing, if I still do well, we could meet each other again.
Just a couple more questions for UFC lightweight contender Kenny Florian. And Kenny, I'm curious as to, you know, you talk about the Ultimate Fighter and the finale and Diego Sanchez winning the contract, but you never really hear about what the other guys get. What kind of a contract do you have? Because they build it up so much. I find it interesting that they build it up so much that this show is for, a contract, a six-figure contract in the UFC, and then the other guys seem to get contracts, maybe not as lucrative as them, but as the winners, but nonetheless getting a contract. What kind of contract do you have with the UFC right now?
Right. Actually, you know, originally when we were, you know, with that whole season, I remember we thought that there would only be one person who would get a contract with the organization, which was why I think we felt so much pressure and why we wanted to be on, you know, the Ultimate Fighter so bad. Now we've seen guys who win, lose, doesn't matter. Regardless, we'll get the contract anyway. I think the contract that we had was basically, you know, they talked about the six-figure contract, but really it was over a period of 9 fights. So back then, Diego getting the finale, or being the Ultimate Fighter, got a 9-fight contract with the organization. Myself, I also got a 9-fight contract. So I kind of got what's called a second-tier level. Diego got the most that you can make, obviously, by winning the show. I got the second most that you can make by getting to the finals. Then everyone else kind of got the exact same contract as well for 9 fights. So they all got, you know, whatever it is. I think it was, you know, 5 and 5, and it's slowly built up after each tier. So you get, each tier is 3 fights long. You get 3 fights at a certain amount, then you get another 3 fights at a certain amount, and then it goes up again for the last 3 fights.
Okay, so if my math is correct, you have 2 fights left on that contract.
Correct. Correct.
And do you guys start talking from now about signing something, you know, for the future? Or is that closer to when the 9th fight happens?
Yeah, actually, I've recently renegotiated a contract with the organization, actually.
Oh, really? For how many fights? Are you able to talk about it?
Yeah, I actually can't talk about it right now because I actually haven't officially signed it, but I am in talks right now, and we've come to, you know, kind of a verbal agreement on the contract, but I haven't actually signed it yet. But it will be, you know, probably for 6 fights.
All right, great. Thanks for dropping the little exclusive on us here.
You guys are the first ones to know that,
All right, good stuff, Kenny. UFC 73, stacked. You had the fight against Alvin Robinson, and I just, other than the fact that the card was on my birthday, I love the fact that you came, after the main event, and it seemed as though, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the whole thing happened so quickly. I mean, they almost like rushed you guys out there to end the pay-per-view, and just, you just totally dismantled him. And nothing against Alvin Robinson, but beating him in 4 minutes and 30 seconds. And then your interview afterwards, you were just so hyped up and saying how you finished fights. And it just seemed as though, to me, when I think back on your career, I really view that fight as a turning point for Kenny Florian, where you seemed to have something to prove that, that's it. You're finishing fights now, and you're going to be a force in the lightweight division. Do you share the sort of same sentiment as me on that?
Definitely. Yeah. Going into that fight, I felt like I made a lot of progress. I came off a win off of Mishima, who I had a lot of respect for. He was one of those guys who I considered a big time veteran, fighting over in Japan, fighting from Shooto, fighting in Pride. And, it was definitely a confidence booster for me. And the way my game was coming together in preparation for the Alvin Robinson fight, training with all the great guys that I was training with, I felt that, really, I knew I was going to get back to the top, and I was ready for whoever that night, and Alvin Robinson or whoever it was that night. And I went into that training camp, or I guess into that training week for that fight, knowing I was going to finish that fight. And I had it in my head that I was going to say that after the fight. And it kind of worked out well, because that whole night kind of was a little disappointing. I mean, a lot of fights went to decisions. They weren't kind of, there's a lot of hype for the fights, but they weren't that great as far as excitement wise. And I kind of wanted to throw a wrench into the whole picture and say, get some attention from the fans and say, listen, this is the way that I train. This is the way that I prepare for my fights ever since the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu days, where I was competing in, with the uniform or in submission wrestling. I always wanted to finish my fights. I never planned a strategy around controlling my opponent and just winning on points. I always went for the finish. That was always my style. And I kind of wanted to let everybody know that, I know that they want to see fights finished. I know when they want to see knockouts and submissions, and I wanted to provide that for them. And I knew Alvin was going to be a very difficult opponent to face. He was a tough wrestler once again. And I went in there like, this is my second shot almost against Shirk. And I was going to make the most of it. Obviously, you can't compare Robinson to Shirk right now in his career, but that's what the way I saw it. Every fight from here on out, I saw as a rematch for the title. And I'm excited with the way my game's coming along and the improvements I've been making physically and technically and mentally. And I'm looking forward to what the future holds.
All right, Kenny. So final question before we let you go. You said that you've kind of closed the book on 2007 in terms of fighting in the octagon. We've heard of some fights for UFC 80, UFC 81, 82, a little bit about 83. Are we going to see you on any of those cards? Anything in the works right now?
Man, I hope so.
Give us another exclusive.
I'm itching to get back in there, man. I'm really itching to get back in there. And it seems like I've been away for so long, even though I fought in September, but it almost seems like, 20 UFCs have passed since I've fought. And,
right.
I start to see all these fights, and I definitely get amped up. And I hope to be back definitely either February or March. And I hope that it's someone very tough and someone who's going to really challenge me and bring me back to that top spot. And I'm looking forward to getting back to a title shot. And I can't wait to fight someone tough, and I hope definitely by March, you guys will see me for sure.
Any hints as to who that opponent's going to be?
Man, I have no idea. I think just the way that things are planned out, the way that the fights are scheduled and who's available and all that stuff. From what I see, I thought maybe I would fight the winner of Spencer Fisher and Frankie Edgar. Frankie Edgar obviously won, so I think he's definitely a top opponent who's the potential for me to fight. And I think also probably the winner of this fight with Guida and Huerta. I think it's going to be very interesting to see who wins this fight. Both are top contenders. And so I just want to fight the top guys. I want to be considered as one of the top fighters in the world in my weight class. And obviously I want to get the title. So Bring on the toughest guys. That's who I want. And I'm actually going to be out in Vegas for the Guida Huerta fight. I'm actually going to be commentating that fight. So
Oh,
I'll
really?
have a up close look at a possible opponent. Who knows for the future? So
Will that be for Spike?
that will be for Spike. Yeah, the Ultimate Fighter finale main event. Guida Huerta. I'll be.
Yeah, no, no. Of course, I know that.
I'll be.
I
I'll
didn't
be
know that
joining.
if you'd be brought, doing it for some Spanish language network.
Yeah, no, it'll be. Yeah, it'll be. On the Spike
Oh, that's
version.
great.
Yeah, looking
I'm
forward to
guessing
it.
that's your first time in the broadcast booth, so to speak.
It will for yeah for definitely for UFC. So I'm looking forward to it.
And who are you picking? In a word, who do you like there?
Man, tough fight to call right now. I think the edge goes with Guida.
All right. Well, we'll hold you to that, Kenny. Thanks so much for joining us, and best of luck to you. You're absolutely one of our favorite fighters here at Jerry Park, and we really appreciate taking the time to talk to us. Best of luck in 08, and we hope to see you again February, March, or whenever that time comes.
Definitely, man. Much appreciated, and anytime.